People, I think, subscribe or spend money on creators because they want that message out there, right? Like if someone has a certain political viewpoint, or if you work in a certain industry and, you know, you want someone to be talking about something that's related to like your business or your interests, you want them to keep going. That Why Subscribe When You Can Invest thing really started to resonate a little bit, because it really started to better connect the dots between the rationale as to why I am subscribing to something beyond just, you know, the superficial notion that it may just be the content itself.
Welcome to Perpetual, where you'll get the hottest takes and insights on what's happening in the constantly shifting world of media and marketing. I'm Adam Ryan. Let's go.
All right, Jared.
Welcome, my friend.
Thanks for having me. Good to see you again.
You too. I think about moments in, you know, the last 10, 15 years that I like distinctly remember as little pivot moments of like my views of life and where I wanted to go. And I think you might have two different blog posts that represent those different moments in my life. And I'm so happy to have you on and to dig into to where you're at today and how things have been.
Yeah, no, thank you. I mean, that means a lot. For those that don't know, we've had a relationship for a long time, and I've always, I always get extremely excited about how you're thinking and what you're building. And, you know, I've always appreciated the mind share that you and I have been able to do together. So this is a pleasure.
Well, I think the interesting piece that you always have is your perspective. And you came from the kind of pillar of journalism of the Post, and had a great story career. And then now at TCG, specifically focused on TCG Crypto's Fund. I mean, from an outside looking in, there's no similarities there. What connected you to that? What's the bridge besides everyone kind of reading your thoughts online while you were at the Post and like talking about record label? You were obviously innovative with your thinking, but what do you think made that jump?
Well, my foray into crypto is pretty unique. My story wasn't one of, hey, I discovered Bitcoin in the early days and bought a lot of Bitcoin and made a lot of money that way. Even though there were a lot of people telling me to do that early on, and I did, you know, I did dabble. It wasn't necessarily something that was just very clear to me that I wanted to commit my career to. And journalism was actually the catalyst for why I got really excited about crypto as a technology. And quite simply, it was, I think, 2017, 2018, when Trump was coming into office. And we were facing a few headwinds at the Washington Post, and I'd say like the news business more broadly. One was very obvious to many people in media, and especially many people in news, which was just our business models were no longer in our control. We built great businesses around advertising. We provided a service and content to customers who deeply appreciated it and deeply wanted it. And at that time, you know, Google and Facebook were kind of like the big two, you know, named the duopoly that were starting to take most of the advertising share. And Amazon quickly kind of followed up. And then, you know, I think is now like a triopoly.
Yeah.
And that to me was really interesting because subscriptions were really starting to blow up as it relates to news and media. And in many conversations that we'd have with customers and the broader public, it was like, would you subscribe to news? And, you know, the answer was always, of course, like we find news is extremely important. We need this information. You know, it was a very altruistic type language that would describe the transactional relationship between a customer and a news business, but it was very believable. And then what you'd find is that, you know, oftentimes when people had to open up their wallets, what they say is not, you know, exactly what they do. And of course, you know, with the internet and the optionality out there, there's, you know, a ton of ways that people can get information now. So that was one big indicator, which was the business is changing, the models are changing. And as hard as advertising is and was, you know, the subscription business is as hard. It wasn't necessarily a savior. So if we believe our product is good, how do we showcase that our product is good and worth paying for? The second was separate, but similar, which was this notion of like deepfakes, fake news. It was like, you know, we would often talk about like how important original journalism was and the work that goes into journalism, and that people are consuming content on these distributed platforms where you really don't know the provenance of that information. And outside the US, that's even more peer-to-peer through like WhatsApp groups and so forth. And deepfakes, misinformation is still a problem, you know, today, 8 years later. And those two things I thought were like really interesting, because both were core challenges in the news business that if solved would really provide a ton of value and association for customers as to like why we do what we do. And that to me, you know, very ironically or unironically, was blockchains. Like this notion that if information started to become put on an immutable ledger where people could clarify information, they could see the provenance of information. On the flip side, they could manage and control, right, how that information is monetized, how it's shared. Then there's really unique things that could be done there. That led me to really want to kind of jump all in. And I became CEO of a company, Poet, which you find in any business, timing is everything. So that in itself had its challenges. But journalism in itself was, you know, effectively the reason why I got into this business. Now I've evolved, you know, in a lot more broader interests as it relates to crypto, while still also focusing very heavily on media and the media business. But there is a unique connection there.
The theme of democratization in some ways being the downfall of traditional journalism, what we realized was like, okay, there is only, you know, one Sarah Fisher at Axios. There is only one XYZ amazing reporter with all the, but 10 minutes after they post that, it's in your WhatsApp channels. It's everywhere else. Business models are corrupted. It's all done. And democratization, like ironically, is the theme of crypto, I feel like, in that sense, it's like what it's all about. But there's this like, I struggle with this, is like, it still is a problem. Like sustainability and democratization kind of are this like two magnets that like they're attracted, but they push each other off. How have you, you know, you're now years at TCG, and I think probably based on my own feelings and insights, probably get more deal flow and insights than just about anybody out there. How do you kind of think about this from a company perspective of like, okay, we want to embrace democratization, but also churn matters, sustainability matters, incentives matter. How do you like kind of correlate the two today?
So I think there's like two major points to be made. One is just around really trying to listen to consumers and really follow behaviors versus telling, which has been kind of probably the biggest shift that's happened in media over the past like 25 years. And you've seen that in the disruption of a lot of business models, and whether that's like classifieds, which used to be a huge business, or more recently, like what happened with Pitchfork, where, you know, the industry came to the realization that you may not need critics because people could simply just spend 10 minutes listening to the first three tracks of a new record and make their own decision. That's been an ever evolving, accelerating wave that I think has been fascinating to be able to observe and then also invest into. So we had a ton of energy around the creator economy. You had things like Substack, and you know, you've seen it in the podcast space and the other space where anyone could be a creator. They leverage Twitter and other distribution platforms to start to drive that sort of awareness and the business down the funnel. I mean, you've done that personally with a bunch of different creators. Crypto has kind of taken that a step further in a really unique way where, you know, accessibility to markets is hyper democratized, where you would traditionally invest in the stock market. You know, if you have $5 to $10, it's extremely hard to make a lot of money off of that. Of course, you could lose it as well. You oftentimes, if you go through a broker, need a certain amount of money in your bank account, right? There's a lot of hoops to jump through. And even more so, again, I like to focus a lot non-US lately because the problem is even bigger on a global scale where people struggle to be able to get bank accounts, lending, credit for their small businesses, you know, very legitimate type businesses. And crypto is really kind of like strengthened an individual's ability to either get involved in markets, invest how they want to invest, use their money how they want to use their money, get loans, credit, so forth, without having to have a minimum or having to have, you know, a background that is perceived healthy or approved, you know, by banks. So I feel like very similarly to what we saw with creators and people putting things online and being able to build businesses around themselves, which I think is a trend that is undeniable. In fact, it's completely disrupted the media business in itself, and media companies that took advantage of that have been highly successful. You know, Barstool Sports being one of those, The Ringer being another one of those, where you know the brand, you have a relationship with the brand, but each individual consumer has a relationship with, you know, the creator of the individual. You now have markets reflecting that as well, that could be used in very interesting and unique ways. So that's kind of one side of it that I think is really, really interesting. You use the word sustainability, which is really fascinating as it relates to kind of crypto markets, because crypto markets swing, crypto businesses swing, right? And when the attention is on you, there could be a ton of revenue, there could be a ton of users, there could be a ton of activity. And then when the attention leaves you, that could go down, right? And you see that in the broader markets of like blue chip type cryptocurrencies like Bitcoin, Ethereum, and Solana. And you also see that in businesses, you know, businesses that service or support different pockets of this industry, where you start to see a ton of revenue, a ton of activity start to come through. And then, you know, in a bear market or a down cycle, that changes. And it's made it really interesting in terms of trying to pattern match whether you'd invest, you know, if you want to pair it to like SaaS type models, where you look at revenue and you're trying to do ARR, MRR, and you're trying to match into it. You know, crypto kind of uniquely creates its own sort of bucket where you have to understand certain market cycles. You have to understand how to capture value at the most opportune times. And you have to really have a kind of like long range view of where things are going to go and how those things start to be created and put together to be comfortable. So I think that's why, you know, many investors that have gotten into crypto don't necessarily stay in crypto or struggle to deal with kind of the booms and busts of it, because it is very unique. It is very new. You know, we don't have a massive rich history of being able to look through, you know, 50 years of how crypto venture capital has worked or how the markets have worked or how consumers have behaved around it. You know, it's still very nascent in kind of the grand scheme of things. But bringing all of that together, the reason why I'm so addicted and obsessed with it is that it is the most elastic industry that I've been able to spend time, invest in, and participate in, where you really feel that the boundaries and parameters that often exist in more incumbent businesses, they're not necessarily there. And you have the opportunity to take risk. You have the opportunity to try something new. You have the opportunity to see how people are engaging or behaving against these certain technologies and then try to figure out how to grow businesses around it. What's different, I'd say, now than probably 3 or 4 years ago is that we are now kind of seeing a deeper focus on crypto products and things that are more kind of like core to crypto behaviors versus trying to make crypto something else. Like 3 years ago, it was, what could crypto do to music? What could crypto do to entertainment? Is Hollywood going to blow up because of this same dialogue that's happening around AI? And what we're seeing now in crypto is that while there is still like rapid experimentation and some successful businesses that are expanding existing passion bases and incumbent industries, the category itself is now so large, has so much money, volume, energy, and attention that it in fact can start to create within itself and kind of build new products, be more revolutionary for its core users versus trying to attract and bring in people that may not be ready or may not be interested to have to come in.
What I think you do better than most people that think in this space is think about new models. And this was before crypto. You were still thinking about new models. This is one of the pieces that inspired me, was your relationship between how media companies would talk with artists and rework with them and rethinking that structure. I absolutely believe that new models are how you actually make progress. Consumer, that has nothing to do with consumer habits necessarily, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay, a consumer wants to buy this thing. Great. What's the model behind it? They don't fucking care, right? Necessarily. Mm-hmm. When I think about my experience, I'm with crypto, think the subscription piece sticks out in like such a big way to like totally reimagine, you know, hey, I have this NFT. It's a 5-year subscription. I paid up front for it. That person has a cash, but I can like resell later if it goes higher. It does expire, so there's some renewal. There's like so many cool, interesting things. There's a history of it of like, oh, I want to go own this celebrity's. Yeah. Like there's so many interesting ways to use subscription. The barrier feels that you have to then onboard into a wallet and do the whole thing, and it's getting better. But you know, when you think about building within crypto itself, which I think is like, you know, there's plenty of subscription companies within crypto that they should be utilizing this. How do you kind of reimagine a subscription product with that?
I wrote something 4 years ago around why subscribe when you can invest, which at the time, and I still think is a very interesting type model, which is subscriptions, especially for like online content, digital content, is very one-way transactional, right? Like I pay you and I get, you know, this content or this service. And what I found, at least back then, is that a lot of the newsletters that I'd subscribe to, either free or paid, I didn't necessarily do it purely because I needed that content. Oftentimes, to be quite honest, I didn't need that content in the cadence and consistency that it was being delivered to me. I did it because, you know, I wanted to support a creator or a writer, or even a step further, which I think is probably way more common and probably gets more political, but it is like people, I think, subscribe or spend money on creators because they want that message out there, right? Like if someone has a certain political viewpoint, or if you work in a certain industry and, you know, you want someone to be talking about something that's related to like your business or your interests, you want them to keep going. That why subscribe when you can invest thing really started to resonate a little bit, because it really started to better connect the dots between the rationale as to why I am subscribing to something beyond just, you know, the superficial notion that it may just be the content itself. That evolves to really interesting models. I think The Information did this like really well early on, which was, yeah, you know, you're not just subscribing for content. You get access to like inside meetings, yeah, right? Like, yeah. I forgot what they called it, but it was like, you know, conference calls and things like that, or, you know, other like offsite type meetings. And those subscription models that like really enable community and collectiveness and maybe access that you otherwise wouldn't have gotten continues to be really interesting. Like we talked about this a long time ago at the Washington Post when Clubhouse was really, really hot, around the idea of, okay, well, people are subscribing to unlock content, but they probably want to know more, right? They probably want to know how a journalist got to a story or what the process was. And the idea actually came around like in all hands, like our all hands at the Washington Post used to like feature journalists that would talk about kind of what they were working on and what they were doing. And I just found that shit fascinating. And it ended up not taking off and, you know, may still be considered. I've been out of that company for quite some time, but those sort of things I think are really interesting. But again, it's kind of getting down to the root of, you know, why we're spending money and why we're interested in these sort of things. With crypto, like there's a ton of models that could be born out of this, right? And I think you've seen the early innings of experimentation there. I mean, NFTs were a big one with Bored Ape and others, where, you know, you bought an NFT and by having that NFT, of course, like hopefully it increases in value. To devil's advocate myself, like one of my biggest critiques of NFTs was that the incentive to get out was greater than the incentive to stay in. So yeah, it was always going to be hard to maintain, but it was always this promise of something more, access to something more, benefits to something else. And I think you're kind of seeing that today, you know, with things like meme coins and other sorts of kind of collective community sort of endorsements and energy to kind of build something net new. But I think like the subscription innovation has been lagging like to an extreme amount. I believe that there's a ton that can be done even just by looking at data. Like I know at least 4 or 5 years ago, the biggest acquirer of subscribers for a lot of news organizations was when you'd get an op-ed writer. You'd get someone who has a huge following that people want access to. They'd subscribe and then you get the rest of the bundle, right? By by coming in. So it was always just very clear that the relationship with an individual was just very strong. The idea that you have to subscribe for a certain amount of time probably like could be innovated upon. The benefits that you get out of a subscription could definitely be innovated on. So I think a lot of that needs to be done. The last thing I'll say is, and this term comes from a friend of mine, Andy Weissman at USV, but it's this notion of cognitive load. And what you bring up is true, right? It's like, there's a lot of really cool things happening in crypto. Some things you need money, some things you don't need money. Like Gabby Goldberg on my team wrote a great article last week around amazing crypto kind of consumer type products and experiences where you don't, you know, even need money to start, like taking the financialization out of that. But the cognitive load is real for most consumers. And to kind of pattern match that with something that like I'm sure all of your listeners know really well is people have tried to make micropayments a thing forever, right? And Andy's brought up cognitive load to me in the sense of like when people have to like make a decision around like, is this worth $1 or $10? Like they've already moved on. And that's what's made it so increasingly hard to have those models be real. I think crypto struggles with that as well. I think crypto struggles with that in the sense of like what things will cost and how much people are willing to pay for something. And even on the inverse, the fact that it is so difficult to like oftentimes onboard, get access, get a wallet, engage in these things, oftentimes turn people off. But I think that that is increasingly getting better. I had a conversation today around the fact that I don't think most people that experimented or visited crypto during the last cycle that probably used a MetaMask and did things on Ethereum probably haven't engaged on Solana yet or downloaded a Phantom wallet. And when they do, they're going to be like, holy shit, right? This has completely improved in terms of overall user experience and, you know, my ability to engage and participate in these apps. So I do think that there's going to be a moment for that. And that's been a big focus. But I think if you're thinking about UX and you're thinking about onboarding, you really have to think about the decisions that you're forcing customers to make. Because what we know and what continues, and I believe will always be true, is that if you're asking them to do too much or think too much or make too much of a decision on their own, they're never going to take the leap to experience.
My personal experience, I was part of CPG Club early. And it was, as someone who signs up for all the communities, I was like, this is amazing, super high quality group, no sales spam, well monitored, benefits were like growing. I think I sold it. I mean, this is like peak cycle. I think I sold it for like $4,000 or $5,000. I paid like $200 to get in or something.
Yeah.
And I like go back to that moment all the time because I was like, I literally, there's not $5,000. Like there's no way. If anything, I'll wait till it comes down and buy it. It like got to a point where it was like a stock. It was an asset.
Yep.
And I think about that and I really haven't heard. I know they're still going and that they're Chris amazing and that group, but like it lost a little bit of esteem because all of a sudden the early folks were like, I'm just going to go pay for a vacation for family. Thank you. If there was a different incentive there of like, hey, you can double your money if you sell, but everything over goes back in. Still could double. What other subscription can you double your money on, right? There's like all sorts of like, and maybe every year you hold it, you get to make more and more or something. But like, there's like, there was something so close to that, that it was like, man. And I think about that as like, someone's going to solve the complexities of like the user experience and the psychology of that. Cause it had nothing to do with the product. It was like, it's more valuable to sell than it is to keep. That's like part of the deal.
Yeah. And two things that you make me think of. I mean, one of which is that oftentimes crypto is kind of like bucketed as a single entity, even though there's so many different experiences and products that one can engage in, whether you're, you know, buying crypto, staking crypto, lending, or, you know, there's more of like these, like what we'd say, like Web2 type applications where you're joining fan clubs and other things as well. The reality is, which is obvious, is like, if your product's good, your product's good and people will stay in. So I think last cycle, and it's not the fault of any founders or builders that, you know, in the space. I think it's just more so like how consumers jump to it and what the market created around it was that sort of became the core focus. And there probably wasn't enough time for a lot of people to build like the products that they were looking to build because there was so much energy and focus towards the amount of money that people just all of a sudden kind of stepped into by being a part of a community. And I think building better products kind of get us there. The second is like an exact example. One thing that I've always been like very interested in, and this could be like traditional subscriptions, news subscriptions. We have a company, Medallion, that's doing music fan clubs. That's open now, but if they were ever to close it, I've thought about this idea, which is if you have an experience that people are dying to get into, let's just say music fan clubs, for example. I'm a big fan of Phish.
My bingo card just got hit, by the way. Brandon Ross, we got
yes, there we go. Love Brandon Ross. But if there was like a limited like 2,000 person Phish group that was launched by the band, and like you buy into that group, say you buy in for $500 or whatever it is, and then by being in that group, you get access and benefits to all these things. Maybe you get discount merch, maybe you get pre-sale tickets so you don't have to get locked out through Ticketmaster. Maybe you get to meet the bands, preferred seating, all these different benefits. What's really interesting if you start to do that stuff on chain is that, okay, there's 2,000 people that got in and have their own kind of like identity and key into this experience. And then they could choose if they want to stay in it or get out, right? And there may be people that love Phish that are like, I want everything that this group is getting. I'll pay $1,000 to get in. And then it becomes more organic and natural because the value of the product and the experience is so good that that market actually becomes a very healthy, very interesting market because it continues to get higher because the value of it is just, there's basically no ceiling on that price. Similar to like if the New York Times or Washington Post were looking to tier their subscriptions a little bit more beyond content, maybe there's things like events or background access to news stories or example 1, 2, and 3, where people will pay for a premium subscription that is capped at a certain amount. So it feels very, you know, exclusive. It feels very unique. And then if they, being the customers, choose to sell out of that, they can, but then they lose access and they could sell for whatever amount. And maybe a certain percentage goes to the New York Times, but it starts to create a very more organic, unique flow where you're not just waiting for the price to go up to get out because you really have a deep kind of relationship with that experience itself. So you're kind of like going through this challenge of like, well, do I want to sell out of this? And then if I want to get back in, I'm going to have to pay a lot more, or do I hold on to this? And does that create a very unique model that could start to be experimented on?
I think from like a media perspective, the, you know, one of the things I struggled with early, I think you might have been like my third pitch of work week before we even knew what we probably were calling ourselves. But I was really debating at the time of like, should we try to go crypto? Should we not? It was hard of 2021. And the thing I kept struggling with, it was like, I couldn't decide if like the issues that we were dealing with were people, where companies were just so old in their models, or if technology was the barrier. And the real story was, the tipping point for me was like, my wife goes to Starbucks every day, like obsessively. We lived next to a Starbucks for 10 years, goes every day. And that fucking app works. It drives behavior. It drives positive business outcomes. But it was incredibly innovative for their space. And I think what the opportunity, like, I think the thing that I think the worst, the most bear case for crypto, which is still for me, is that like it pushes people to think further about how they model and incentivize and reward users. And I think what the bull case of that is, like, crypto is so elastic, to your point, and it's lived through fucking ups and downs that everyone else would die through, that there's probably a solution within that technology that ends up solving that in a more democratized way. And I think that's been the thing I kind of go back and forth with, is how do you still, you're in a habits or a hits business, right? Like, and I think the hits business works well with this uncapped, like, I'm in a fan, I love this stuff. If you're in a habits business, it's a different, it requires a different action and motion. And I don't think traditional digital media companies have figured that out yet. And I think that's kind of the opportunity for crypto too.
It's important to consider, again, I mentioned this earlier, but how new a lot of this development really is. So much time and energy, rightfully so, has been spent kind of in the underpinnings and the foundations of how these things work. And people talk about like MetaMask's user experience from a wallet perspective, but the reality is like MetaMask was a developer tool, you know, because it was developers that were kind of going into these products and experiences, and you're kind of creating a UI on top of that. But then you're also thinking about okay, how does this connect to all of these different functions? Well, there's a gap here. Somebody has to build that function that then connects the dots. So I think the past 5 years has really been about how do all these kind of systems communicate? How do they work? How do you make that really seamless so that on the back end, these things are actually like producing and delivering the way that is to be expected? I think the next, you know, 3 to 5 years on the application and consumer side, things are going to become so clean where you'll have, you know, whether it's traditional type businesses or new businesses that are leveraging crypto for the benefits of, you know, things either being on chain or to your point, like membership and rewards and points and redemption and interoperability and all of the unique things that can be done through this. Those things are really going to start to become very obvious to the point where for many, they won't even realize that they're kind of using these tools.
The thing that I think AI and crypto are getting paired all the time and made fun of and, you know, different meat statuses right now, right? But I think the thing that needs to be said, you talked about being new, you know, make the argument about AI, whatever, but the reality is AI is at its best, right? It is like an optimization tool. It does not work without a set of data that already exists. It is just taking that data and making it more optimized, faster, more efficient. But a lot of these on-chain, it's brand new. There's no set of data. There's no work there to build off of. It's building something 0 to 1. And anybody that's done that knows how difficult it is. And I think, yeah, I wanted to make sure to remind everybody that listens to podcasts that don't sleep on it. I think it's still something that everyone needs to just pay attention to and be watching and learning.
And the thing on top of it, like an analogy, it's not apples to apples, but it's very similar to like coming from the news business, like how you translated newspapers to digital. You could argue that the similarities outside of content, there are very little of. And maybe we even focus too hard on pattern matching to the point where like you go to the front page of the New York Times and the Wall Street Journal and the Washington Post, and it's the same design and it's the same content. You know, it looks like the front page of a newspaper.
Yeah.
And as it relates to like your point about crypto and on-chain data, like I think it becomes very, very, very powerful. The idea that people are doing things on-chain where that data is both public and can be shared by others. And what I'm seeing is, which is very natural, we're spending a lot of time right now as it relates to on-chain data, trying to pattern match to how data is used today. So it's like, how do you do attribution if you want to do advertising on-chain, right? Or how can you leverage this data for targeting if you want to do things on-chain? And the reality is that as more data gets put on-chain and more things are created, we're very likely going to create something extremely net new that may have some relation to the way that things were done before. But if we're successful at doing what we want to be doing, it should be completely net new. So you always have this kind of moment during, you know, an evolution of kind of technology and behaviors where you see a promise and you get excited about it and people are using it and you want to basically expedite that. So you're looking at how people are spending money or using things in the existing model and bring them forward. But the reality is that the biggest opportunities that'll come out of this are something that cannot and were not leveraged or utilized in the previous tech world.
It's a little bit like talking like, imagine 1995 if I was like, hey, Jerry, we're going to build Arc. It's like, there's no way of doing that yet. And it's not even thought about really, right? Like there's just pieces that takes maturity. And I think the only reason why it's at the top of mind for so many people is because consumer habits evolve so much faster. I don't believe that ChatGPT is just like that much better than other apps. It's just that democratization has made it easier to adopt these things and consumers are like, fuck yeah, I'm in. And companies are struggling to keep up, and the expectations follow that. Awesome. Well, I appreciate you so much for coming on, and I hope we get to do it again. For those that don't follow Jared, where can they find you?
Yeah. So on Twitter, I'm at Jared Dicker, and I wrote a lot 2 years ago. I'm starting to write a lot more again. I'm Darkstar at Mirror.
Also, you hired an absolute superstar of a team at TCG. So if you don't follow Gabby and the others on that team, they're also great to listen and learn from as well. Yeah. And then maybe a Phish concert if you're at one of those.
Decent. I'll be there.
All right, Jared. Thanks so much, man. I really appreciate taking the time.
Thanks, Adam. It's great.
Thanks for listening. If you want deep insight and hot takes on the world of media, make sure to subscribe on Apple, Spotify, Google, or wherever you listen. And if you enjoyed this episode, share it with a friend. I'll see you next time.